The National Network of State Teachers of the Year, NSTOY, is a membership organization of State Teachers of the Year and finalists that works to provide all students with exceptional and equitable learning opportunities by improving practice, policy, and advocacy through the lens of equity.
What does it mean to be truly educated?
To be truly educated means to be fully aware of the world and events that take place every day and how everything affects everything. I think far too often we live in an isolated situation where we're so focused on our world and our situations that we don't understand that we live in a big world and everything that happens has context. Everything that happens affects one another, or everything that happens is the result or something else.
Rodney Robinson is a senior advisor in the Richmond Public Schools Male Teacher of Color Initiative in Richmond, Virginia. He's a 2019 National Teacher of the Year, the number 8 Root Magazine Top Influential African American in 2019, and the HBCU Alumnus of the Year. In this episode, Rodney will explain why school leaders need to be intentional to not only recruit teachers of color, but why it is also important to support and retain them. On July 10th, Rodney gave his keynote at the National Network of State Teachers of the Year Teacher Leadership Conference that was supposed to be titled Learner-Centered Instructional Practices. However, Rodney felt compelled to shift gears and talk about the importance of promoting and retaining teachers of color. This is the 5th and final episode of a 5-part series covering the NSTOY Teacher Leadership Conference. You will hear from the speakers themselves, who will help us dive deeper into their message. Throughout this series, I have been joined by the 2018 Virginia State Teacher of the Year, Michelle Cottrell Williams.
Hi, Erin. Great to be here.
Michelle is going to help me unpack the takeaways of these educational leaders whose message will take us beyond the curriculum.
A lot of people in attendance at NSTOY may have had a kind of tangential awareness, right? But I really feel like you spoke in a way that said, hey, like, we have to do something and we can't do it in a way that's paternalistic or tokenizing, right?
I don't know. People wanted me to be a token.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm clearly not a token. <You know?
laughs> Yeah.
And so it was just a weird situation. It was one of those situations where, like, it's a no-win situation.
Yeah.
You know, so you just go into it to make it the best of a bad situation, because, you know, according to some people, I was a sellout. I was this. Mm-hmm. I was bad for going to meet the president. You know, and then according to people on the other side, you know, I was the crazy leftist teacher, you know. Or from the White House, I was controversial because I said I wanted to go to the house my ancestors built.
Right.
They deemed me controversial for saying that.
Yes. Well, I think it was Stephen Colbert who said that reality has a well-known liberal bias.
So it was just a awkward situation. Plus, I was dealing with blowback from things I didn't do.
I know.
And that yeah. ultimately was the frustrating part about the entire thing. I was catching a lot of heat from what other people did, what other people said. And it's like, wait a minute, I didn't even say that.
Yeah.
I didn't even make those comments. But yet, here I am getting the hate mail, getting death threats, and having to answer for other people's BS.
Right.
And so that really put me in a, I don't know, it was a weird place where it's like, I don't trust anyone. It was sort of like, I know I'm by myself this year. It's just me and my wife.
Yeah.
And that was just a hard situation to deal with.
Yeah.
Well, I have a question for you, Rodney, in hearing all this. Is it worth it? I mean, the what you're doing as a Black man representing teachers in America and your voice, was it all worth it?
Easily I'd do it again, because, you know, it means so much to Black people. you know. And then we, you know, one thing, you know, my college, Virginia State, always taught me that there's a certain burden that comes with being Black in America. No matter what position you're in, it's going to be even harder because you're Black. You know, you may not know it or you may not think it. I remember, it was weird. I remember one of my senior thesis class, so I was talking to my professor, and he asked me, are you a historian or are you a Black historian? You know, and that was a question that always resonated with. And he asked us that every year of my freshman, sophomore, junior, and senior year. And he wanted an answer by the time we were seniors. You know, and it was weird because, like, you can say you're a historian, but because you're Black, you will be cast as a Black historian. And the burden on you will be heavier than other burdens when you go through life. And so it was just one of those things that resonated with me. But the reward is worth it because, honestly, I've had cultural moments this year that, you know, couldn't be matched. From meeting John Lewis to going when I went to Capitol Hill to the Senate building, like literally like all the Black security guards, the Black nurses, the cafeteria workers, they knew who I was before I even opened my mouth. As I was just walking through the house, walking through the wall halls of Capitol Hill, it was like, hey, you're the Black National Teacher of the Year. You know, and then when we were leaving the Senate, we were headed to Mike Pence's house. That was a whole nother weird situation. But we were getting into a cab, and I remember this other cab pulled up beside us, and just some random cab driver's like, hey, you're the teacher of the year, dude. And I was like, what? Yeah, you're the Black National Teacher of the Year. That was funny.
Yes!
National Teacher of the Year. And then, like, it was like, yeah, cool. I was like, that was kind of weird. Then we get like three blocks up the street, and the same guy pulls up beside us, and he has like a big iPad sticking out the window, taking a picture of me, you know, to show people. And it was just moments like that all year is really what made it worth it. And, you know, seeing kids, you know, say, hey, we have a Black male National Teacher of the Year. And, you know, and like, I remember one school, George Washington Carver in Richmond, they had a mural. It was like Obama, Frederick Douglass, W.B. Du Bois, and me.
Wonderful.
You know, that was just like, those are the moments that will never be replaced.
But again, that highlights that dual consciousness that W.B. Du Bois talks about, that you can't just be the National Teacher of the Year. You are the Black National Teacher of the Year.
Yeah.
And so it's just really, really like, you know, and then it's sort of like Obama. People, like some people, like, you're our forever National Teacher of the Year.
Wow. Wow. Love it.
And, that, you know, those moments can't be replaced. So I would never, ever. Yeah. Plus, I've had a chance to have conversations that wouldn't happen if I wasn't who I was.
Yeah, well, you made a point of taking pictures with Black educators wherever you went.
Yeah.
What gave you that idea? What inspired you to do that?
I do that with my kids anyway. If I see a black person in a position that you don't normally think of, I take a picture and I would put it up as my screensaver on my computer. So I put it up in my classroom. So that was just something I've always done, because you need to see people like you in jobs and positions that you don't normally see.
Yeah.
You know, I remember the day I was named at CBS, there's like, I walked in and the room was run by two Black male producers, you know? And so I made a point to take a picture with them. And when I got back to my school, I showed my kids, like, these two brothers run the CBS morning show. You know? And you know, they were like, what you mean? I was like, you see Gail and you see all these other people, white people, but these two brothers are in charge.
Yes.
And it just gets them the idea that for that kid that, you know, just is into photography, he may spark his mind to say, hey, I want to be a producer of a television show. I want to be a director of a television show. So that's just a practice I've always done.
Okay, awesome. Education. Yeah, well, that actually kind of leads into the next question that we have for you about teachers of color, especially Black male educators. When you spoke, you provide really staggering statistics regarding teachers of color in the United States, from their lack of representation to their longevity. So why should school leaders and teacher leaders be concerned by this?
Just because the numbers show kids learn better, kids, students of color learn better from teachers who look like them. You know, that is a proven fact. Dr. Constance Lindsay led the study at Johns Hopkins that proved that. And so it's really important if you want to talk about closing the achievement gap, well, your teacher population needs to look like your student population. Mm. You know, you need to have that role model. I think Sharif always talks about it, Sharif El-Mekki. Mm-hmm. He talks about windows and mirrors. Mm-hmm. And he says when white kids see the world through education, they see mirrors. They see mirrors that constantly reflect them and what they can, who they are and who they can be in life. Whereas black kids are looking through windows. They don't see anything that looks like them. They're just looking at a world that's outside, that's foreign. Nothing reflects themselves. And so when you get those teachers of color, it makes a difference. It truly does. You know, we know the studies, 39%, less likely to drop out of high school. They get two in elementary school. They're 19% more likely to go to college. To me, this is the most important study when it comes to closing the achievement gap. And it's not just teachers of color. We need, to create an environment where we can have openly LGBTQ teachers, and we need Latinx teachers, for God. That's just as well. That's 2% as well. Latin male teachers of color. And so we really need to work on diversifying our workforce if we truly want all students to be successful.
Yeah.
And we do want students to be successful. We want all of our students. But anyways, you in your presentation, you talk about this need for teachers to be available for students of color to discuss issues of race. As a white male teacher, teaching in a school that with less than 1% black students and no black teachers at all, what can I do in my school to help my students of color to feel like they have a safe space where they can feel welcome to air their concerns?
The best thing you can do is honestly work on getting a teacher of color in the building, or a role model, some sort of role models of color in the building, because it matters. Even if it's not a teacher, maybe an after school group run by a community member or something throughout the day, because students feel so much comfortable, especially if you're in a predominantly white environment, if the person in front of them listening to their concerns is a person of color, I remember, it's funny too, I remember maybe a couple years ago, Jennifer McClellan, who's now running for governor of Virginia, she's a state senator, she came to my school to speak to my students. And I just remember them, they were just very quiet, very passive, and if you've ever seen Jennifer McClellan, she's a very fair-skinned black woman, And so when she was talking, they were just there. And so I remember I just whispered in the one kid's ears, like, you didn't know she's black, right? He's like, what? And then it was like the game of telephone, watching them to whisper to each other's ears throughout the classroom while she was, talking. And then one kid just had to say, excuse me, what's your race? And she said, oh, I'm black. And, my father's black. And, showed him a picture of her family. And then they couldn't shut up. Once they saw that she was a black woman, they let go everything about the system, about their lives, what they needed. And just that one little fact, because they understood that she was a black woman. So now they feel more comfortable. And it went from not them being completely silent to them, her having to like rush out because she had another engagement and still wanting to talk about it, And so just something like that makes a big, big difference, because a lot of our kids have been abused by most white people they see in their lives. Mm-hmm. And so there's this stigma of mistrust, And so if you can, now, if you're true about what you do and you've always been there for a student, if you're a white person, then they will open up to you. However, it takes a long time to earn that trust. Yeah. Where someone black, there's that immediate connection, and it just brings down that wall and allows them to be more vulnerable.
It makes me think exactly of how you described your teacher of the year as being surrounded by people, but feeling so lonely. I imagine that's the experience For so many of our Black students in predominantly white schools, that they're surrounded by people, but they don't know who they can trust, and it feels lonely.
Yeah. And so that's why I say it's important, you know, even if you don't have, you know, a teacher of color on staff, to get some community members, some organization, someone to empower them. And then, you know, then just support them. A lot of times we create these spaces for Black students, but then we don't support those spaces. Mm-hmm. You know, what good is having a club if the club doesn't get the same amount of funding as other clubs in the school? Mm-hmm. If the club isn't elevated to the same status as just say the Student Government Association or something else in the school. Mm-hmm. So it's really important that not only do you create the space, but then you support those students when they're attempting to bring up issues, when they're attempting to talk about things that they go through, rather than just dismiss them. Oh, we gave them a space, they'll be okay. Mm.
Yeah. So along those same lines, can you share your thoughts about the need for educators of color and conversations about race to exist in predominantly white schools and communities? What do you say to white educators of white students who believe that race isn't their problem?
I think I was on a call with the State Teachers of the Year yesterday, and I think somebody said it best. The best response to that is you're preparing for a 21st century world. And in a 21st century world where everyone is interconnected in life, you will have to deal with people of color. And so once you go out, you want to be prepared and you want to have the tools necessary to listen, to understand their issues, and to work together to solve these problems, because our world is interconnected. You know, this goes back to what I was saying about truly educated. What's your role in this world where we live in? And how does what I do, my practices, affect other people? And so as long as we start to have that conversation, then you'll understand your privilege. You'll understand how you benefit from things that you may not have ever seen, you may not have ever known, but you're still the beneficiary of that. And so it's really important to have those conversations. And honestly, I think our kids want to have those conversations.
Yes.
Want to have those conversations. However, it's the adults who are scared of it. The adults feel uncomfortable. I don't want to say that because someone might go back and tell their parents something, and then I'm getting called into the office to have, you know. And so it's really hard to navigate those spaces. You know, I was talking with some teachers in some very, you know, red states yesterday, and they were saying how hard it is to have these conversations from a political standpoint, because literally their job is at stake mm-hmm. when they have mm-hmm. these conversations. But those conversations are extremely necessary. And so you have to push. You have to push, you know. I think I saw a tweet this morning that said, if Black children are young enough to experience racism, mm-hmm. then white children are young enough to learn about racism.
Mm. Right.
And that really resonated with me because, you know, most Black children, by the time they're 5 or 6, they've been traumatized mm-hmm. by a racial incident. And so now all of a sudden we're saying 10, 11, 12-year-old white kids shouldn't have to learn about race because it's hard. You know, try being Black or try being yeah. a brown person. That's even harder. Yeah. And so we need to start having these conversations, and it all starts with the parents, with the school boards. You need to start creating policies that are anti-racist and policies that protect teachers and students who want to have these conversations. So it's really important that you push on that level. But sometimes in some communities, gosh knows, I know it's hard.
Yeah, and honestly, as a white educator, my job is less on the line if I have these conversations with my students. And so, you know, it's my responsibility, right?
Yes.
Right.
Yes, it truly is. And to understand and to, more importantly, to call out those who are being racist, let's be honest. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's something, that's the one thing you can be accountable for. You can just, if somebody has practices or things that are harmful to students of color, or present ideas that are harmful to students of color, you need to speak on that. Mm-hmm. You need to have that conversation with that person because it's not fair, especially if you're in a custodial role where you may be in charge of students of color. Your whole attitude, demeanor is harmful because kids, Black kids know who the racist teachers are. playing it up. We know. By the time you're 10, 11 years old, you know who's racist and who's not. You know, and so when you go into that classroom, it's automatically a tense environment. It's an unwelcoming environment. And so you're doing harm to those students.
Well, one of the points that you made this morning is that we need to bring in Black support within our school, whether it's volunteers or teachers, administrators, into our school. So what can school leaders do to attract and retain teachers of color or volunteers? And does your answer change depending upon the demographics of the student population? Like, for example, like my district, where, like I said, we have less than 1% Black students in our school, as opposed to somewhere like where Michelle teaches.
That goes back to what I was saying earlier. Give them space and support them. You know, it's almost that simple. You know, you can't be threatened by giving them a space to work with those students. A lot of times, you know, you bring in Black teachers and their job is to just work with the Black students.
Right.
You know, to work with this. Now, first of all, they're a teacher. You need to respect them as a master of pedagogy, number one. You know, because they can teach any subject, you know, and if they can't, then you support them. You give them professional development. You give them the same opportunities that you would give any other struggling teacher, rather than just say, oh, that's just Black teachers. They're no good. We tried to hire them and look what happened. We got a bad one. You know, most teachers are bad in their first, second, third years.
Yep.
But what are you doing to support them? What are you doing to elevate them? You know, are you helping to alleviate? Maybe they're bad because every kid, Black kid in your school is relying on them. And so they're so burnt out from that social emotional piece. Now, I remember I went back home last year. I think I told the story at InStory, you know, and I was visiting, you know, I went visiting the middle school and I visited the one Black male teacher. And he had like 40 Black kids in his class in the corner. And I was like, how do you get this many kids in your class, in an all Black class? He's like, oh, school hasn't started yet. This is just every morning these kids come to my room to check in with me because they don't feel comfortable sitting in the cafeteria with all the rest of the students. You know, they want a space where they can feel safe. So while other teachers are making copies and planning lessons and making last minute tweaks, he's doing this every morning. So right. Think about how that affects his pedagogy because he's already had a class before school started. So he's already a little tired, more tired when that first bell rings. And so it's those types of things. We need to make sure that we're supporting them, we're giving them space, and we're listening to their concerns because their concerns may be completely different than, you know, your average white teacher.
Yeah.
Well, and you also tell the story about your band teacher and how he had to retire early just because he was tired. And that's the other thing that we want to avoid. First, we want to get Black representation into our school. But on the other hand, we don't want Black burnout. How do we avoid that?
Just support, you know.
Just support. Yeah.
Support, because it's that burden. We're working, it's almost like double the job. You know, we're responsible for the social, emotional well-being and the academic side of every student that comes in our classroom. But then we're responsible for every other Black student in the building. And that is hard. You know, it burns you out. I remember him telling me, I remember maybe 2010, 2009, I was like 2008 because I was still in football. I was coaching. And they had a head coach position out there. And I was like, I'm an alumni. I can go out and get the job. And I remember I called him. We had a conversation. He said, you don't want to come out here. I was like, what do you mean? He's like, you don't want to come out here. Because number one, you won't be respected for your teaching ability. You know, you have to deal with the parents. You have to deal with the redneck racist students. And it's going to burn you out. He said, the good news about band is it's an elective. So the kids who are here have an interest and they want to be. But when you're stuck in, you know, classes with students who don't care about band, I mean, who don't care about you, then that bias comes out. Then you have to deal with that. So I am getting a little bit lucky because I'm teaching an elective. And that's what he told me, because I don't have to deal with the truly horrible parents and kids. But you teach a core subject, you're going to have to deal with them. And that's going to burn you out and it's going to make you even more jaded. And so and that kind of hurt me, you know, because it wasn't the school system. You know, But then I thought about it. Where are all the kids who in my group who went off to college? None of us went back. Mm. None of us went back to that camp. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's how you get, because I remember when I was in school, I think we were about 55-45 white, black. Now it's like 75-25. Because my generation, those who went off, never came back because we felt like it was an environment that didn't support us.
Yeah.
You know, so it's really important that you support those teachers of color because they will burn out.
Yeah.
You know, and it's sad, you know, my niece, it hurt her to her heart because he retired her senior year. And so she was just like, I want him around for, you know, well, it was her junior year. And she was like, I'm not gonna have him my senior year. And the reality was I saw a dip in her caring about school, you know, because he wasn't there. Because he was the only black male teacher in the school.
Yeah.
And so I saw it in her eyes that like, and even her love for band faded. You know, even though they got a new band professor, and the guy was awesome. I thought he played some trombone shorty, which is my favorite artist. You know, my niece told me her new music. But because she didn't have Mr. Sorrell, that guy, that father figure away from home, her love for school, it was just like, I'm just going through the motions so I can graduate and get out of here at this point.
Yeah. You know?
And so yeah. That's what it means.
Yeah. Well, and if our students are of color don't feel like they belong in school, then when they leave, why would they choose to become educators and come back?
Right.
Nobody wants to go back to the scene of the trauma as a career.
Yeah.
You know, nobody who grew up, who went to jail, wants to go back and be a prison guard.
Right.
That's literally what we're doing to our kids.
Yeah.
You
know,
yeah.
I always say that when black people go into education, it's really two reasons. Number one, they come from an education family and they understand the role of education and what it meant to be a black educator. Or two, they had a bad experience and they want to save kids from the same experience they had. That's universally the two reasons when I talk to black educators why they went into education.
Yeah. Yeah. And we as teachers have the power to change that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So Richmond Public Schools just announced your appointment to be their first senior advisor in the talent office, overseeing efforts to recruit, support, and retain male teachers of color. What are you most excited about with taking on this new role?
I'm just excited. You know, it's just, you know, we talk about it, but and everybody says we need more teachers of color. We need more male teachers of color. But we like, forget talking about it. Let's be about it. Let's put the money where our mouth is, you know? And it's just weird since it's been announced only a couple of days ago. Mm-hmm. I've had so many people reach out to me around the country, wanting to help with the work, wanting to know what they could do because, you know, our strategic plan in Richmond is a very progressive plan, you know? But to see them actually following through with it, you know, because that was part of the strategic plan is like, okay, so even in these tough economic times, they say we still need this position and we're not going to back away from it. And it took a lot of bravery to do that, you know, and it was a lot of, you know, behind the scenes politics, you know, that kept things from progressing, but eventually it got through. And so it was just really, I'm really happy that they made this commitment and more importantly, that the teachers want this. And, you know, so many, you know, teachers in the district have reached out to me too. How can I help? What can I do? Do you need me to be a mentor? You know, it's just that type of thing. It was sort of like, this is what our people in our district wanted because honestly, you know, especially in education, some circles, there's an idea that there's a push out. We know that we need black teachers, but there's black teachers are being pushed out of places.
Yeah.
You know? And so this was a district saying, no, we're going to make a commitment to keeping people. And for me, this is just an opportunity to practice what I've been preaching. I've been talking about it all year. I've been talking about it my whole career. Now I'm in a position where I can actually do something about it. And it's really, really exciting.
Wow, what an opportunity to listen to Rodney. Yeah. So what are your takeaways from this?
There's so much. He brings so much wisdom and passion and truth anytime he speaks. I just you know, soak it in and recognize that I can't just listen to what he says, right? And feel some kind of way about it and then move on with my life. If what he says, if I accept that and believe that as true, which I do, I have to be different.
Yes.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. No, when I listen to Rodney speak, first I feel so invited into the conversation. He's so inclusive, yet he knows how to push on you to not only draw you in and cause you to lean into the conversation, but also to walk away empowered and challenged and feel like I not only have the tools, but I have the obligation to go and do something.
Yeah. Yeah. And I just keep thinking back to that dual consciousness that he talked about of you can't just be, whether it's a historian or a teacher or a teacher of the year, you can't just be. You are that and you are a black that, right? And how as white educators, we don't have that same experience. I mean, certainly, you know, Kimberly Crenshaw talks about intersectionality and how there are so many parts of our identity that are existing simultaneously, that some have privilege and some are oppressed, right? And so I certainly know what it's like to be a teacher and to be a female teacher. Right? I know what it's like to have that dual consciousness of personhood and womanhood. And so I need to use that experience to empathize with, to understand, and to believe that that is true for others in order to take on a new identity for myself as a teacher, right? I can't just be a teacher. I can't just be a female teacher. I need to be, you know, an anti-bias, anti-racist teacher who is taking active action with my students and my colleagues to make it better.
Yes. Yeah. And I listening to Rodney, I kept thinking, what if our teacher education programs were asking us, are you a teacher or are you a white teacher? Mm-hmm. What would that say to me? I mean, what would that say? And what obligations do I now have when I put that label, are you a teacher or are you a white teacher?
Yeah. Well, and I imagine because whiteness is the dominant culture, that's a weird question for a white person to answer, right? It's like, well, I'm just a teacher, but that's what privilege is the ability to view yourself as normal.
Right.
And so what a powerful exercise in identity and in identifying what is my role as a teacher. I'm not just an isolated person in a classroom. I'm part of a system, and acknowledging that I am a white teacher in that system changes the way I interact in that system.
Correct. Yeah. Because as a white male teacher, my presence is going to be intimidating to many students, to my students of color who are less than 1%. To my Latinx students who are, that's a largely growing population. I think we're about 20% right now. And especially like our non-English Latinx students.
Right.
What does my presence say to them? And what am I doing consciously to make my classroom more inviting to them? and where they can feel free to learn, to be challenged, and to explore.
Right. And yeah, when they walk, especially because you're a high school teacher, when they walk into your room, they don't trust you. And that's not your fault.
No.
That doesn't mean you're not trustworthy. It doesn't mean that you're a bad person. It means that they have had experiences year after year in school of being let down by their white male teachers. Right? Of starting the year hoping that this time it'll be different, and it isn't. Right? Same with their white female teachers. That we every year at the start of the year express our care and talk about our love for our students, and the students start off hoping that that's true, right? And then something happens to show them, oh, it's just like it always was.
Same thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And so when they get to us in high school, why would they give us the benefit of the doubt?
And absolutely. So
it's on us to ensure, regardless of how hard they test us and push us, to ensure it doesn't matter. You are safe in this room, and I see you and love you for exactly who you are right now. You don't have to be different for me.
And I'm going to make mistakes.
Yeah.
And I'm going to own them when I do. And please help me to see them when I do.
Yeah. Yeah. Not that you're putting the burden on the kids to teach you, but to call you out.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
To say, you know, hey, miss, like, that didn't feel right. Or that, you know, that seemed racist. I've done that. I just a couple of years ago had a class that in the class there, I had two black male students in the class, and it was like the first week of school. I was still learning their names, and I called one of the black boys by the other black boy's name. And I was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. And he was like, it's fine. You know, he's used to that happening. And I said, no, it's not fine. That was very white of me to do. And I apologize. And I will not make that mistake again. And if I do, please don't let it go. Don't say it's okay.
Yep.
Yes, because we grew up in this country, right? We have all been breathing the air and socialized to this culture, right, of white supremacy and anti-blackness. And if it comes out sometimes, not if, when that comes out, because it will, we can't get defensive and be like, oh my God, but I'm a good person. How did that happen? It's, you stop, you say, I'm sorry that that happened. I'm trying to be better. And then you move on and you keep trying to be better.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Michelle, so much to learn from, so much to glean from this conversation. And I'm ready to go out there and do better.
Yes. I love it. I love it.
So, what does it mean to be truly educated? Over the past 5 episodes, we've learned from educational leaders making a difference in the classroom and at the local and national level, and they are doing it for the sake of our kids. For Ted Dintersmith, being truly educated means we are preparing our children to face the challenges of a world that is changing dramatically. For Michael Soskill, it means that the system is flipped, and the role of leadership is to ask, how can I support you? For Sharif Al-Mekki, it means we rethink how we train teachers entering into the classroom. For Abdul Wright, it means we see the spark of potential in someone who desperately needs us. And for Rodney Robinson, it means that we ensure our children will have the opportunity to learn from teachers who represent the diversity that makes up America. For more information about Rodney Robinson and NSTOY, visit beyondthecurriculumpodcast.com and check out the show notes. This concludes the series on the NSTOY Teacher Leadership Conference. I'll be taking a few weeks off to prepare the next series. Be sure to look for it. If you enjoy this program, be sure to hit the subscribe button, as you will want to catch each and every episode. And remember to leave a rating and review. I appreciate your support, and it helps others find the show. I'd like to encourage you to partner with me through my Patreon page. Your donation will help offset the cost of producing this podcast and bring more meaningful opportunities at Take Learners beyond the curriculum.
All of the workshops and keynotes from the Teacher Summit and annual conference are available for purchase at teachersleading.eventbrite.com. Beyond the curriculum, listeners can get an additional 20% off with the code BeyondPod.